Good morning, everyone. This morning, for exhortation, I'm going to lead off with a tragic story of how false doctrine can cause tragedies to compound, what the Bible really says about dealing with grief and suffering, and why we should follow Job's example and choose to honor God and live, rather than curse God and die. Back in the year of our Lord, 1740, a woman in Stockholm, Sweden, named Christina Johann's daughter, killed an infant child with an axe so that she could go to heaven. I wish this was a joke, but unfortunately, it's not. Christina's fiancé, whom she dearly loved, had recently died tragically. Christina was heartbroken and wanted to join him in heaven. She couldn't just kill herself, though, because then she'd go to hell rather than heaven. So instead, she murdered a child, which carried the death penalty in 1700 Sweden. That way, rather than killing herself, she would be executed. And since she confessed and repented of her sin, she would be a repentant sinner and would go straight to heaven when she died. Plus, since the infant was completely innocent, he would also go straight to heaven. So they would all be happily in heaven forever, Christina, her fiancé, and even the infant, and Christina would no longer be stuck here on earth, desperately missing her fiancé. And unfortunately, as I'm sure you all know, while Christina's murder of a child is true, all the stuff about them going to heaven is not. As Christadelphians, we know that when people die, every part of them dies, that there isn't some sort of soul that lives on in heaven or hell, that, as it says in Ecclesiastes 9 verse 5, for the living know they will die, but the dead do not know anything. And so Christina and her fiancé and the infant are all just dead. And maybe at the resurrection, God will choose to resurrect them and judge them according to their works. But Christina's horrific act didn't do anything to speed up the reunion of her and her fiancé. If God chooses to make that happen, that will happen on the day of resurrection, whenever Christina managed to die. Christina did not speed up that process. All she did, in the hopes of ending her own grief, was cause a lot more grief. Grief for anyone who loved her, grief for anyone who loved the infant that she killed. But the timeline didn't change. The resurrection day will still happen at its appointed time, which only God knows. And until then, all of the dead remain completely unconscious. Which is, by the way, why the false doctrine of the immortal soul, while on the surface seeming to be a comforting thing, your relatives are actually all happily looking down on you from heaven, is actually a far worse solution than God's actual plan. In God's plan, if someone he loves dies, that person isn't separated from his family for years and years waiting for them to die too. That person's next waking moment will be at the resurrection, along with all the other saints, where we will ever be with the Lord. Yes, death still separates families. Those left alive on earth are forced to deal with the pain and suffering that comes from the death and all the other consequences of Adam's sin. But the life that God gives does not separate families. It brings them together. God's plan is far better than the fantasies of man, which is why we should all be very thankful that we are Christadelphians and haven't been misled by the false doctrines of other churches. But unfortunately, being a Christadelphian doesn't mean we don't feel suffering now. Believing that there will be a resurrection, when we will be united with our families, when the corruptible bodies we have now will be replaced, when we will be forever with our Lord, that certainly gives us something to look forward to, but it doesn't take away all our pain and grief and suffering now. The hope of heaven doesn't do that, and the hope of the resurrection and eternal life in the kingdom doesn't do it either. Having hope is a very good thing, but it doesn't solve everything. One very strong example of that in the Bible is the example we've been reading in our readings lately, the example of Job. As I'm sure you all know, in one day, Job lost all of his children and all of his possessions. And then, if that wasn't enough, a few days later, he loses his health as well, and he is reduced to sitting in ashes and scraping his boils with a piece of broken pottery. And so, of course, Job, being a righteous man, just says, "I have the hope of the resurrection, so everything is wonderful." Not at all. Of course he doesn't do that. And it wasn't that he didn't have the hope of the resurrection. He expresses it beautifully in Job 19, 25 to 27, verses that you know very well if you've ever listened to Handel's Messiah. But despite having the hope of the resurrection, he still felt terrible. He still felt like he wished he would never have been born. And that's not an exaggeration. He says exactly that in Job 3, verse 11. Why did I not die at birth, come out from the womb, and expire? And a few chapters later in Job 6, starting at verse 8, he's reduced to begging God to kill him. Oh, that I might have my request, and that God would fulfill my hope, that it would please God to crush me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. And so one question that you might have is, if Job is so unhappy, why doesn't he just kill himself? Why is he begging God to do it? Why doesn't he just say, get his wife to chop his head off and put him out of his misery? That's actually his wife's suggestion. Job 2 verse 9, then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But Job rejects it. Verse 10, but he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Why? What's so wrong with killing yourself, with euthanasia, as you might call it in this case? Job doesn't think there's some sort of hell he's going to go to. That doctrine certainly wasn't invented yet. So he knows the next thing he's going to see is the resurrection. Why would fast-tracking that process be such a bad thing? I mean, he's already asking God to kill him. Why would it be wrong for him to do it himself? What makes it right for God to do it and wrong for Job to kill himself? And also, while we're talking about this and asking questions, why does he say, well, his wife say, curse God and die? Why is it not just like choose to die as opposed to curse God and die? What would choosing to die involve, and why does it involve cursing God? Well, what I think this comes down to is that there is a very important principle about life and death that comes from the very beginning of the Bible, and that is that humans are built in the image of God, and so they belong to God. Not to other humans, not to themselves, but to God. Jesus uses exactly this principle when someone asks him whether it's lawful to pay tribute to Caesar. And what he does is he asks for a coin, and he asks whose image is on the coin. And they say, well, Caesar's image, because back then, rather than having an image of, say, an American president on the coin, they had an image of the Caesar. And he was like, in that case, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. Because we are built in the image of God, and we belong to God, not to ourselves. To God. And so God makes laws, like in Genesis 9, verse 6, where he says, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. Because to choose to kill yourself would be to take God's possession and destroy it. We don't have that authority over our own lives. We are in the image of God, so we belong to God. And it is up to God whether we live or die. And so, if we truly believe in God, we're not going to take God's possession. We're not going to curse God and die. And when I say believe in God, clearly I don't mean just believing that God exists. Clearly, Christina Johann's daughter clearly believed that God existed, and yet at the same time took her life into her own hands and used the arm of the state to kill her. But what I mean by believing in God is trusting that God is in control and that his plan is the best one. That no matter how much things hurt right now, no matter how much you are confused by what God is doing with your life, that you nonetheless trust that it belongs to him, not you, and that if he hasn't chosen at this time to take it away, then that's because he has a good reason. That ultimately God knows better than you, and you're going to go along with his decision, even if it's really painful for you right now. That's what believing in God is. Believing that he makes good decisions, that he knows what he's doing. But of course, in the moment, believing in God can be a very hard thing to do. Job clearly had a lot of doubts about what God was doing. There's 43 chapters in Job, and we will read as we go through the month of December about his doubts, about his questions, about how he doesn't think God is quite doing the right thing here, and maybe God has made a mistake. Job is very confused, and this is why we're seeing him do things like ask God to hurry up and kill him, and asking God, why have you not taken my life away? Why are you bringing so much suffering on me? Is this making you happy? What are you doing? And this is why, honestly, when you're in a lot of pain, I find Job can be a comforting book to read, because Job is repeating many of the questions that you are probably asking at that point as well. And It can also be comforting because Job has three friends who don't understand either, but do take this as an opportunity to attack Job and blame him for everything that's happening on him. And depending on your friends, this may also be something that you can empathize with. Either way, sometimes these difficult circumstances don't bring out the best in people, and Job is a book that does not shy away from that truth. But despite all this, what Job does do throughout the whole thing, even if he is very confused by what God is doing, even if he is unsure that God is making the right decisions, he does keep believing in God. He complains a lot, but he doesn't take his life into his own hands and choose to end his own suffering. He chooses instead to keep living, to defer to the judgment of the God who was keeping him alive, and refuse to curse God and die, to ascribe goodness to God, to say that from the same God who gives us good, it's certainly in his rights to give us evil as well. And even though it's not a fun thing to do, he keeps going. There's 41 chapters in Job, and after 41 chapters of suffering and complaining and some rather beautiful poetry along the way, the other wonderful thing about Job is that it does have a happy ending. That when you're going through suffering, you can read Job and you can empathize with it, but you can also get to the end and realize that it has a happy ending, that God does have mercy, that God, in fact, repays him double for everything that he lost, that God did have a plan for Job, and that even though Job in the moment might have been tempted to curse God and die, thanks to him honoring God and living, not only was it a benefit to himself, but it's a benefit to everybody else who gets to read the book of Job. That there's a happy ending to the book of Job exactly because Job chose to honor God and live. And it's also kind of ironic when you're reading through Job that you realize that this is something that Job actually asked for. In Job 19, verse 23, "Oh, that my words were written! Oh, that they were inscribed in a book!" Which is always a great thing to read when you are reading the book of Job. And it's absolutely true, of course. Job's words were written in a book, and thanks to that book, Job's sufferings have helped far, far more people than Job could ever have imagined when he was going through them. And that's something that I think is quite powerful. Job did not realize when he was going through his sufferings how many people his sufferings were going to help, that they were going to be written in a book, and that it would be read by millions of people that Job would have no idea would ever exist, that would exist long after his lifespan. But it's something that God knew. God knew all those people would exist. God loved them at the time when Job was going through the Job's sufferings, and knew that by putting Job through those sufferings, it would be helpful to people in the future, long after Job's lifespan. And this is something which I think is quite helpful when you're going through hard times, is to realize God might have a mission for you, like he had a mission for Job, that is something you could not even imagine, something that is important for people who you have not met and might not ever meet, but is nevertheless something that God knows about and is going to use you as part of. This is something that Paul actually understands quite well and talks about in Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1, so this is his epistle to the Philippians. Paul is clearly imprisoned in Rome, and he is trying to make the best of the situation, but at the same time, he's in prison. It's not a wonderful thing. And despite talking about how he's had this opportunity to witness, and the imperial guard has heard about the gospel as a result of Paul's imprisonment, and he's looking at the good things, at the same time, he talks about in verse 23 of Philippians chapter 1, "I am hard pressed between two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better." Because he knows that in the resurrection, he's going to be with Christ forever, and he's not going to be stuck in this prison. And that would be a lot better than the situation that he's in right now. But verse 24, "But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all for your progress and joy in the faith." Paul kind of wishes that he could die. That he could die and his next waking moment would be the resurrection. And like he says in verse 21, "For me to live is Christ and to die is gain." But at the same time, he also realizes that living right now might not be the most pleasurable experience, but it is really important for people who he loves. That for your progress in the joy and the faith, I will remain and continue with you all. He recognizes that his suffering, in some ways, is the gain of others. That he is living for the sake of other people, despite the fact that for him right now, it's not a pleasurable existence. And another interesting thing about this is, again, this is a letter that we are reading, the letter to the Philippians. We are blessed by being able to read this letter that Paul only wrote because he was stuck in a Philippian, in a Roman prison, and had to write a letter rather than visiting the Philippians in person. If Paul had been able to visit them in person, if he hadn't been stuck in a prison, we wouldn't have this letter to the Philippians. And so again, we can, by us reading this, realize that there is proof that God did the right thing by putting Paul in that prison. That his letter to the Philippians has helped far more people than Paul could have helped if he had been at liberty to go and talk in person. Despite the fact that at the time, I'm sure Paul was not happy at all about being stuck in a prison. And so, something I find helpful when going through a hard time is to think about how this might not just be for me, that there might be that this might. That this is part of God's mission for me. And whether or not I understand all the ramifications of it right now, God clearly knows what he's doing. As it says in Romans 8, verse 28, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. All things is a really strong statement. But what it doesn't say is all things work together for your pleasure right now. All things work together for good for those who love God, but there's lots of those people out there. And many of them, you will never, in this life at least, have an opportunity to meet. Even in the book of Job, you have, as readers, we have the sort of advantage of getting to read about this whole scene at the beginning where God is talking to Satan, and there's this whole little almost challenge going on about between God and Satan about how Job will react. Job never finds this out in the book of Job. I don't know how the author of the book of Job found out about this, but it's not written that Job ever finds out that God was doing all of this sort of for the sake of Satan. Because God doesn't necessarily consider it important to tell us all the details of what he's doing. Some of it, I'm sure, is because we couldn't understand, that there's no way Paul could understand all these different people that his letters would help. But at the same time, God, if we believe in God, then we can believe that when all things work together for good for those who love God, that God does have a plan, that we, as God's children, are part of that plan of God, and he has a mission for us. And we might, as with many sort of missions, the your superior officer does not always tell the soldier exactly all the reasons for what he's doing. He gives the soldier enough to do what they are supposed to do in the moment, but often there's a much larger strategy going on here in the general's head. The soldier doesn't find out about, and the general may never tell the soldier. The soldier may find out maybe after the war what was going on. And so again, I find it helpful to think about, I am a soldier in God's army and I am doing my duty right now, and he has a good plan and knows what's going on. And I might be going through a lot of suffering right now, but he understands that. Unlike generals, bad generals would just throw away their troops. Our general loves us and is bringing all things together for our good. But he also loves the other, our brothers and sisters as well. And this might be something that is not just about us. It might be some for somebody else. The same way Job's suffering was more about God and Satan than it was about God and Job. There might be a lot more going on here. Nevertheless, if I believe in my general, if I believe in my God, then I believe he's doing the right thing and can try to go on and trust that if I keep breathing, if I stick to the mission, if I keep going, he will do the right thing. And of course, sometimes it's not actually that hard. Sometimes Sometimes it is easy to figure out ex that you did something wrong, and what you're getting as a result, this trial that you're going through, is a direct result of a mistake that you made. We read about that sort of thing in Hebrews. And in some ways, I find that the much easier sort of condition, because that one is sort of something that makes more sense. The sort of karma idea that you do something wrong, then something bad happens to you, and then you learn from. So we just read this in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 5. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. And so sometimes bad things are going to happen to you because you messed up, because you have some important lesson that you need to learn, and you need, and at that point, God is disciplining you because he loves you. I certainly felt that way when I had a driving too fast problem and was caught by the police, and learned through that act of discipline that I needed to slow down for the safety of both myself and everybody around me. And in fact, I was very thankful that the discipline in that case was a expensive ticket, as opposed to, say, crashing my car and having to go through, an expensive hospital fee and car repair and all that sort of stuff. So God disciplined me quickly, as opposed to later. And in those circumstances, I highly recommend learning the lesson as quickly as possible, because God, like any good father, is going to probably continue to discipline us if we don't learn the lesson the first time. And if you learn it e the easy way, it often is better than having to go through a few rounds of discipline before you finally get the message. So certainly, in those circumstances, if you know what you're doing wrong and you're being disciplined as a result of that, fix it. God loves you. He wants you to do better, and he's going to make sure that you learn that lesson. So learn it as fast as you can. It's best for everyone in that circumstance. But those are, in my opinion, the easy trials, when you actually know what's going wrong and know a way to fix it. The much harder ones, in my experience, are the ones where you do the right thing and you get punished for it, where you can't be like, oh, I'll just fix this thing that I'm doing and then bad things will stop happening, because you're doing the right thing and bad things are happening. And unfortunately for us as Christians, that's something that's very likely to happen to us, because that's exactly what happened to Jesus Christ. If God is willing to let his own son be abused, mistreated, whipped, beaten, hung on a cross for doing the right thing, then unfortunately, we can expect nothing less. And we were warned exactly about this by Jesus himself. So in John 15, a few different places, but I'm going to read the John 15 one starting at verse 19. John 15, verse 19. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you: a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, he will also keep yours. So, the same way that people persecuted Jesus, they are likely to persecute us. And unfortunately, we need to be ready for us that as Christadelphians, as brothers and sisters of Jesus Christ, we can expect to suffer like Jesus did. And when that time comes, and when we are being attacked for doing the right thing, then you may at that time be in a lot of pain and wish you were dead and wish it was all over and wish you were in the kingdom in the future that you know is coming and is going to be good, rather than stuck here in the right now where it's painful and people don't seem to be listening and everything seems to be going wrong. But again, if we're following the example of Jesus Christ, we know how that story ends, that the suffering that Jesus went through did have a purpose and that it was worth it in the end. And that by honoring God and obeying him all the way to death, Jesus brought salvation to both himself and all of us, his disciples. Again, as we read in Hebrews 12, starting at verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And so, to summarize, like Paul, like Job, and like Jesus, you unfortunately should expect that you're going to have hard times in your life. You're going to have times when you're in a lot of pain, times when you're really sad, times when you might wish you were dead. And when those times come, the example that we have is that at that point, we should choose to honor God and live. Choose to believe that God has a reason for this suffering and to trust Him, even if you don't understand in the moment the why or the how of why this is happening. And nevertheless, choose to live, to choose that as long as God has chosen to give you breath, you will keep breathing, that you are His, you are not your own, and it is up to Him whether you live or die, that is a choice that you're going to leave in His hands. And certainly, if you've done something wrong to deserve this, learn from that experience and stop doing it. And if you've done something right to deserve it, keep doing that, even if the world hates you for it. But even if you really don't know what's going on, keep breathing, honoring God, and live.